Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. We got an excellent hour for you. Daniel Jeremiah will join us. Daniel Jeremiah will join us in 25 minutes from the NFL Network. We'll get his take. Really, our next guest. It's interesting. It's the old, you can hate the, don't hate the player, hate the game. It feels like that's where we are with some draft picks, where we get to the, well, you took him, but you took him too early, right? Does that mean you didn't want to take him? It was a very deep and solid offensive line draft. You had Penei Sewell went early in the first round. The Bengals passed on him. Rashawn Slater, who we had on a couple days ago, he went 13 to the Chargers. Vera Tucker, the guard from USC, he went in the first round. Of course, we had Christian Darrisaw. He was on the show a couple weeks ago. He went a little bit later. He had some injury concerns. Tevin Jenkins went in the second round. He's, of course, from Oklahoma State. But the one that jumps out at people are like, man, he's got great length with 34-inch arms. He's strong. He's got grit. Played at Alabama, and they kicked everybody's ass. He's Alex Leatherwood. He joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Alex, how are you?
What's up? I'm doing well.
When did you know you were going to the Raiders?
I knew I was going to the Raiders when I got the phone call and Coach Gruden was on the phone.
Did you have any idea before that?
Not really, to be honest. I had a bunch of interest from a bunch of teams. It was about three teams calling me a lot the days leading up. But they were the ones who ultimately chose me.
What were the other, who were the other two teams?
I was getting the Bears. I was talking to the Bears a lot. The Vikings.
Yeah. So, and then the Bears went and took another tackle, obviously, in the second round. So it's not, they probably had you slotted ahead, and then the Raiders moved up. When you hear, what's it feel like to be the guy who people say, well, they reached for a need, that they took you too high? What does that feel like for you when you're celebrating the greatest professional moment of your young career, getting drafted 17?
To be honest, I kind of don't care, to keep it short. You know what I mean? Because, at the end of the day, those people don't know what they're talking about. You know what I mean? I feel like the GMs and the scouts, they're the ones who ultimately, like, watch the film and make that evaluation. And not only that, but, like, the people who are making these opinions, you know what I mean? Like, they don't really matter. Like they don't make the pick. So I'm not really tripping, you know what I mean? And not only that, but I know my worth and my value as a player and what I have to offer and my potential and what I could do. So, of course, it puts, like, a little chip on my shoulder because it's like, I mean, damn, you know what I mean? A unanimous All-American. I won the Outland Trophy, you know what I mean? But clearly that's not good enough. But, I mean, I'm not tripping because I know what I can do and I know what I'm going to do in my career. So I'm just super excited.
I don't blame you. It's like the best of both worlds. You got drafted in the first round, so you're getting plenty more money. You get an opportunity for a Raiders reworked offensive line to be a part of it. And, oh, yeah, by the way, you get the added motivation of people kind of hating on where you were drafted. It's like the best. They don't have to worry about you being content with where you are because people have been critical of the draft pick. It's perfect.
Right.
Alex Leatherwood joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. When did Gruden call you? Did Mayock call you? Who was the one whose voice you first heard?
To be honest, it was kind of all a blur, but I think it was Gruden.
Well, that's really why I asked, is because we hear the recordings of those things, right? Uh-huh. And I'm just wondering, like, it probably in the moment you see the phone ring, you have family around you, everybody's going crazy. Like, do you even recall any part of the conversation?
Right. Yeah, a little bit. He was just asking me if I was excited to be in Oakland Raider and a couple other things, and essentially just told me that they were going to draft me with that pick. So I really didn't care who it was, you know what I mean? I was just elated, super excited, on cloud nine, you know what I mean? Because I knew my life was about to change. So that's a moment that I'll forever cherish, you know what I mean? I was surrounded by my friends and family. And it was just a great moment. It was awesome.
Yeah. By the way, make sure you don't get on a flight to Oakland. You get on a flight to Vegas. I make the same mistake all the time, too.
Right. Yeah. Right? Vegas. Yeah, you're right.
No, listen, it happens to all of us. Like, look, I'm in L.A. I grew up in L.A. The Raiders were in L.A. I still have a tough time remembering they went to Oakland, let alone in Las Vegas. Have you been to Vegas before?
Yes. No, not before. I went to visit, but I had not been to Vegas before.
Okay, so you get off the plane and you're in Vegas. What'd you think during your short time there?
To be honest, I was asleep the whole flight, right? And so the flight attendant, she gets on, like, the intercom, and she's like, we're about to land. So I like sit up in my seat, you know, I'm about to prepare to land. And I look out the window and I'm like, dang, there's a whole bunch of like rocks and stuff out here. You know what I mean? And then I'm like, oh shoot, like we're really in the desert. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Then we fly like a little bit more and then boom, this big city. I'm like, wow, this is crazy. You know what I mean? We land, I'm driving to the facility and it's awesome. I mean, it's a beautiful city. It's a growing city. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The people I did meet were like super nice. Of course, I saw a bunch of Raiders fans and I love them already, but the whole city was just a vibe and I love it.
It's gonna be cool. Like you're basically, they've had games in the stadium but no fans in there. I mean, you're basically gonna be playing the first home games in a brand new stadium. Be pretty awesome.
Right.
Be amazing. Really, really amazing. Okay, but how are you going to bring some of the South with you, right? Like you're a Florida Panhandle guy. You go to Alabama. How do you bring the South with you? Somebody gonna come live with you, cook for you, or are you going to go do the complete solo thing?
I think I'm going to be alone, you know, especially like the first part. So it's just going to be me. It's just going to be me or whatever. But just me coming from the South, you know what I mean? I feel like me and myself, I'll be bringing a little bit of the South with me. So I feel like it'll be cool. It's going to be great.
What's Saban been like to you?
Saban was a great football coach and life coach. You know what I mean? I know he gets a lot of, he has a lot of accolades and all that stuff for being like a great coach. But he also taught me a lot about being, you know, just a young man, being a professional and a lot of things like that.
Like what one thing that rings in your head that Saban told you that you either try to implement or you're going to try to implement now that you're a professional grown man on your own?
I mean, just being where your feet are, no matter like what you're doing at in any moment or where you are in life. You know what I mean? Just controlling what you can control and making sure you're on your P's and Q's at all times.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us. Alex, congrats on the draft spot, and we appreciate you joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me.
All right. That's absolutely my pleasure, Alex Leatherwood. You know, I did a podcast which will drop this week. Gavin, is it dropping tomorrow? Is that what we're doing, the Brian Butch one? Is that tomorrow? Do you know? Okay, so Brian Butch was a high school American, and he was at Wisconsin. He redshirted his freshman year. And so at some point in time, I don't remember, I was on ESPN at the time, and I said, like, you know, like they have one of the most overrated freshmen in the country or something. And the logic behind it was like, hey, McDonald's All-Americans, even 10 years ago, whatever, 15 years ago, they go to school for a year or maybe 2 years, and then they go pro, right? And here was a guy who was redshirting. I didn't know that his mom had a battle with breast cancer or that he was putting on weight. They had him put on, he actually put on 70 pounds, then he dialed it back and lost like another 20 back. But anyway, at the time, like I was just making a matter of fact comment about a player and the evaluation and the McDonald's All-American process, not about the person. And Brian and I now become friends and colleagues, and he covers college basketball for BTN. I had this podcast, and you'll hear us hashing it out on All Ball. It'll drop tomorrow. But it reminds me of Alex Leatherwood. Like here we are, and you have so many people going like, a Raiders, they totally blew it. They reached for a need. He's like, bro, I won the Outland Award. We run every game in Alabama. We mauled people. Our offensive line was great. No one thinks I'm a bad player. It's just in my one moment, like you're the only time we ever recognize offensive tackles is when they give up a sack. Right? In my one positive moment, this is how you do it. So it was great to hear his perspective. And he's like, I can't control that. But it does give him a chip on his shoulder to keep just mauling people. Mauling people.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app. Broadcasting live from the studios of Fox Sports Radio, here's Doug Gottlieb.
Do you guys know this expression, when's the best time to look for your next job?
Oh, yeah.
When's that?
When you're already working.
Yes, when you have a job, it's the best time to look for your next job. Right, that's what they teach you, because the last thing you want is you're interviewing with somebody like, who do you currently work for? Well, I'm unemployed. Well, why are you unemployed? Right? Because now there's like a whole back. Well, you know, like COVID, you can go to the old COVID and they cut things down and whatever. It's like, if you have a job and you're like, look, I have a job. I like my job. I would prefer your job. It gives you the, I'm not running from, I'm running to. This is Jimmy Garoppolo talking about his future.
He's going to come in here. I know it's going to be competition between us, like it was with me and Tom when I got drafted to New England. But, you know, at the end of the day, all you could ask for is the opportunity. And so once they said you'll have the opportunity to start this year and, you know, fight it out, I was all for it. I'm ready for the competition, and that's what we're here for. You never know where your path's going to take you in the NFL. You know, I thought I was going to be in New England for my entire career. that didn't go as planned. So it's kind of one of those businesses, you just got to be ready for anything. Got to be on your toes, got to be able to react. And, you know, however the story plays out, you just got to be able to run with it.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. I mean, obviously you can't handle it any better than how he's handling it. And having been on the other side of it, granted it was with Tom Brady and he wasn't a first round pick. He wasn't somebody who was the number three overall pick and things were very different, but it's the only way to handle it. Is to present yourself in a way in which you're welcoming competition, you want to keep playing, you want to try and win a Super Bowl, and meanwhile, you position yourself for your next job by showing you can handle your current job. You know? I mean, one of the reasons that I think people were scared off of Colin Kaepernick was, it wasn't the signing of Colin Kaepernick, because what happens if you don't play him? What happens if you cut him? What happens if things go bad? And Garoppolo is trying to show all of us things have gone bad for whatever reason in San Francisco, but he's not going to be the guy who, or at least not try to outwardly be the guy who brings down the ship. Pretty solid stuff.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
A lot of things that we want to get to here. Dana Jeremiah will join us momentarily. The Alex Leatherwood thing is interesting, though, right? I mean, here's a guy who everybody considers a very, very good offensive lineman. He won the Jacobs Blocking Trophy, the Outland Trophy. He's a unanimous All-American, and yet he was seen as the Raiders reaching for a need. Let's talk some Raiders draft room football with Daniel Jeremiah, who joins us. We had Alex Leatherwood on. He wasn't really bothered by it, but he did say, hey, it does give me a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, but you know, like I'm playing for the Raiders now. First round pick. It's pretty awesome. Why was it seen as reaching for a position they clearly needed?
Well, I mean, I don't think you're talking about reaching for the position. I think you're talking about reaching for the player. And again, it's all, everybody has their own list and you work off your own grades, and that's what the Raiders did. They felt strongly about him and felt a little more comfortable with him as a player than I did. So, you know, when I watched him, Doug, he played a lot of football there at Alabama. We saw him a couple different spots on the line. I just thought he had some things where he gave up of, you know, a lot of pressures. He has issues kind of opening his outside gate, which means your outside foot. You get powered through your edges there. I think he had 17 penalties or something like that last year, which was way up there. So to me, it was just he's an inconsistent guy, even though he's played a lot of football. Now he's got ideal size. He's got quick feet. He's not a great bender, but he's got quick feet. So there's, again, it's all beauty in the eye of the beholder. I thought he was a second round player. they felt like he was a first-round player. Then they turned around the second round and took a guy that I had a first-round grade on. So that's just the way it works.
What do you think of what they're building?
I think they're rebuilding the offensive line, trying to get younger there and a little bit more athletic. I like some of the things they've done on the defensive side of the ball in free agency, getting out and getting Ngakoue to go along with Crosby. Gives them two good rushers. I still, I don't know how good this corner group is going to be. They've got some young, high draft picks there in the secondary, but they need those guys to come together. I did love Merrick, who they got, the safety at TCU. I think he's a really good player. I think it's going to be defensively, it's going to be dependent on how those young corners come together.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What happened with the Niners? What really happened?
I don't know. It's interesting. When that trade first happened, when they went all the way up to 3, I was on the air when it happened, and my first thought was, oh, this is for Trey Lance. It was on the heels of the North Dakota State Pro Day. It makes sense for where he could take this offense, something they haven't had. That was my initial thought, and then you start getting text messages from people that are tied in with Shanahan saying, nope, it's Mac Jones. That's his guy. So I think at that point in time, I do believe that that was actually the guy he had in his mind when he made that trade, and then they did their homework on the rest of the group, and I think Trey Lance is pretty darn impressive when they went through that process and he came out of it at the end. I don't know when that was, when they ultimately got to that point, whether it was a week before, a month before, or what have you, but I do believe that from that early on moment that it was with Mac Jones in mind. But over the course of evaluating the whole deal, they came out with Trey Lance, which is what I had said all along I thought was the right move.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Then you look at Cincinnati. They take an elite wide receiver who has a relationship with a quarterback, but they've been forever trying to rebuild that offensive line. Did they make the right move?
I think they made the right move in terms of taking Ja'Marr Chase and then swinging back around for an offensive lineman in the second round. Now, the difference I would say is they ended up going with Jackson Carman there as their pick in the second round. And that to me, there were other guys available that I would have had higher grades on at that point in time. So they took Jackson Carman. I would have had a higher grade on Dylan Radins from North Dakota State, had a higher grade on the kid from Texas, Cosme. So there were other players out there that I liked better, but I did like the fact that they realized there was depth in the offensive line and there was only one Ja'Marr Chase in this draft. So I did like that decision.
Okay. And then you look at where Penei Sewell went and you look at what Detroit's building. Do you like that group's first draft?
I thought it was fascinating. I mean, I was laughing through the process because you're like, oh, what's Detroit going to do? And I'm like, you're not putting Dan Campbell, Chris Spielman, John Dorsey's in that personnel department, all in the same room, along with Brad Holmes, who's the general manager, and coming out with a wide receiver. There's no chance that was going to be a big man's draft. You don't come out and talk about gnawing kneecaps and then go take a wide receiver. That's not what you're going to do. So I was not surprised to see the focus on the trenches there in Detroit. And I think they got some good players. Penei Sewell is a really good player. Anzarike, the D tackle from Washington, and Aleem McNeil, the D tackle from NC State. They got stronger and more physical. So I always say, Doug, and I'm sure it's like this in any sport, it's not so much a right plan and a wrong plan. It's you got to have a plan, and right. I can see their plan.
Yeah, no question. And look, it may not work, but at least they have a cohesive cognitive thought. They have a direction. They have a plan. This is how we're going to play. Whereas honestly, sometimes teams are like that in how they play, right? Where some teams just call plays, or instead of having an offense and have a flow and a feel for when and why they do everything they do.
Here's a great point. I was talking to a coach maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and he brought up a great point. He said, and I agree with this across all sports, if you don't have any tendencies, you're not any good. Like, you should major in things and do things really well, and it shouldn't matter what the other team's doing. You should still be able to do those things. But some people try to do everything, and they don't excel in anything. So you do something really well. Hey, we're going to run the football really well. We're going to be physical along the line of scrimmage, and that's what we're going to do. That's kind of the way I look at what Detroit's trying to accomplish.
How long does Mac Jones become the starting quarterback of the Patriots this year?
I'll say yes, he will, but I think it's 50-50 in terms of whether or not that's Cam's performance or Cam, you know, breaking down. I don't think it's – I think it's probably in the back half. I think Cam is going to make it through at least 8 games. I think Cam's going to be highly motivated too, which is going to be interesting to see.
Oh, okay. For people who don't know, Dana Jeremiah, in addition to the NFL Network and Move the Sticks, also the color analyst for the Chargers Radio Network. What did you think of the job that Tom Telesco did?
I thought they came into this draft with really two glaring needs, right? You need a left tackle, and they desperately needed a corner. And I thought they went out with their first two picks. They got good players. They got good value with Slater. Slater was my, as we had talked about a bunch, was my top offensive lineman in the draft. So for Rashawn Slater to fall to them at 13, I thought was a home run. Plug and play left tackle. And then Asante Samuel Jr., who's a ball hawk. And now you're going to put him out in that secondary and get Derwin James back healthy and a really good pass rush. And that's the type of skill sets you want to have back there with that type of front. So I thought he was a great match as well. I love those first two picks.
What are people in the NFL saying about the Aaron Rodgers fiasco?
The interesting thing was I was just kind of learning about it like most people when that report came out. And then you call around the teams and you're like, nah, this has been going on. Like, this has been kind of known, you know, that this was – that he didn't want to be there and that there's a chance that something could happen there. This has been whispered about, talked about for a little while. So I guess I was late to the party on that thing. The other thing is, you know, talk to a general manager. I was talking to one of my buddies in the league about this whole situation, and he just said, look, my conversation with Aaron would be pretty simple. Like, I want to try and make you the highest paid player in the league and do my best to make you happy, but you need to understand that there is zero chance I'm trading you. That's not happening. So if you want to retire, you're going to have to retire, because there's nothing that you could say or do that's going to force my hand in this regard. I thought that was an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, no, I talked to a GM buddy just yesterday morning, and he was just like, yeah, I had a quarterback once that came in and said he wanted to be traded. And I said, we're not trading you. It lasted all of a day, and then it went away. My read on the timing of it was, yes, it was out there, and that was kind of almost like a Hail Mary. Like, let's drop it the day of, right? Drop that news the day of the draft to see if we can motivate them to get it done. And now that it wasn't done, now you're almost kind of venting and saying, all right, well, it wasn't done, but we still want out of here. And
yeah,
like, let's figure out if we can make it the damage so severe that they have to get rid of us.
The challenge to me was that having that come out at that time, that there wasn't enough runway to have a deal of that magnitude come together. You know, that's assuming that they would do a deal. It just, to me, if you really wanted to play that card, if this did come from his side of things, you would have been better served to really push that narrative maybe 2 weeks ahead of time, if that was, you know, what indeed happened.
That's a fair point. So you think he plays for the Packers?
I do. I don't think he wants to stop playing football, and I can't imagine the Green Bay Packers make that trade. I couldn't do it. You know, maybe they get to the point where they're like, hey, we'll just get what we can get. But I would never want to sign my name on that one. I'd never want to be the guy that traded Aaron Rodgers. I just don't think I can do it.
Is Justin Fields the right guy in Chicago?
I think so. I love the move, man. You know, at that point in time, where they are as an organization, just, you know, and I've said it on the air, like, it might be the most boring offense in the NFL. And that changes now with Justin coming in there. And he's a really talented player. I think it's got a chance to really work here. So we'll see. Matt Nagy was there when Mahomes showed up, and they had a pretty good plan in place for him to get him ready to roll. And we'll see if he can do the same thing here with another uber talented player. So I know the Chicago fans have to be excited, Doug, because that was painful to watch that offense the last couple of years.
No, it was awful. Team who had the most uneven draft, like you talked about, at least you know what Detroit is thinking, what they're feeling. Who's the team who you're kind of confused by?
Well, the Cowboys was interesting to me. I thought they might go edge rusher early or corner early. Ended up going Kelvin Joseph in the second round, who has, you know, had some off the field stuff that teams weren't, you know, all the teams weren't comfortable with. I didn't think he would go that high based off of that. So that, you know, Cowboys was a little interesting to me. And going two linebackers, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens in that position group when you look at, you know, Leighton Vander Esch going forward. I think they are not picking up his fifth-year option. I believe I saw that the other day. And then you've got Jalen Smith with his situation, having already paid him. It's just, there's a lot going on at the linebacker position, which is usually a little unusual to have that much action going on at that spot.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. They just seem fixated on it, you know, that linebackers. I just, when I look at that defense, and, you know, obviously you look at those Seattle defenses, Dan Quinn going back in the day, there's good linebackers there, but it was a front. It's a front-driven defense. It's the same one, you know, the Pete Carroll defense we see all over the league. Gus Bradley's running as well. That defense works when you got a great front. And I thought, you know, they might go more in that direction as opposed to the second level of their defense.
Did you like Charlotte Wynn got J.C. Horn, right? I mean, and they and they got Terrence Marshall Jr., talented wide receiver. They did get Chuba Hubbard in the fourth. I don't love Chuba Hubbard, but I love him in the fourth, and especially as a change of pace to what they already have. Where are you on what Carolina did?
So I did this exercise where I kind of assigned points to my top 50 players. And so you just flip it, right? So your number one overall player is worth 150 points. Your number 150 player is worth 1 point. So when you flip it around like that and just look at how I had players stacked, the Carolina Panthers, they came out number one in terms of total points. So 11 picks. And you add them all up, they were at the top of my list. So I love their draft based off the grades I had given these players and how I had them stacked. I thought they got value up and down. They did a good job of collecting some extra picks. And I think coaching in the Senior Bowl is once again proved to be just an enormous, enormous advantage for these guys to get to know these guys, not only as players, but as kids.
Awesome stuff. DJ, did you like it better this year or last year?
Oh, my gosh, Doug. 1,000 times over this year. It's a lot easier to generate energy when you've got, you know, fans screaming and a band and you're outside and you're looking at the people you're on set with, as opposed to being in your board shorts with a sport coat sitting in your office making sure the Roomba doesn't go off.
Yeah, except you could the third round last year you jumped in your pool right in between picks.
True.
Could not do that this year.
No, it was a cold shower. It was just a nice, cool, refreshing cold shower. That was it.
All right. Well, listen, great job once again. Thanks for joining us. Can't wait to hear the next Move the Sticks and appreciate you being our guest.
Thanks, Doug. You're the best.
He's the one and only Daniel Jeremiah. Of course, you saw him on the NFL Network's coverage of the NFL draft. Follow him on Twitter at Move the Sticks.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week, explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Every day at this time, the Doug Gottlieb Show, we play for you a portion of a previous show on FSR. We call it...
And now...
What does the Fox say?
This is Colin Cowherd on why he thinks it's finally the Bucks year.
Once LeBron got hurt, there's no favorite. I think it's Milwaukee's year. We do this all the time. We forget that Michael Jordan won a title in year 7. LeBron won a title finally in year 9. It's year 8 for Giannis. They did 3 things I really like. Number 1, they went and got Drew Holiday, total pro, plays defense, and PJ Tucker, total pro, playoff games, plays defense. So they're a much tougher team. They're a smarter team. The second thing, they match up with the most talented team in the league, Brooklyn. They've got guys like Drew Holiday and PJ Tucker that are annoying to a James Harden, and Brooklyn can't stop bigs. And the other thing is Giannis is actually having a better year than last year, but we've dismissed him. And I look at him right now and I'm like, there's no pressure. It's all on Brooklyn. It's on Philadelphia to figure this thing out. It's on Brad Stevens now is getting hit. There's pressure on the Lakers. There's no pressure on Milwaukee.
Look, all of these things are reasonable, and I think it very well could be the Bucks year, but we just don't know what the Nets look like considering they're still not healthy. And they may never get healthy, and that may only add to his point, which is part of it being your year is you gotta be healthy down the stretch. And right now the Nets clearly are not without James Harden. That said, when they do get Harden back, and they've lost their last three consecutive games since taking over first place, you know, since taking over first place, is that when they have everybody, they just have more dudes. But I like what Milwaukee has done. They have admitted, hey, we need an undersized stretch 4 or 5, and they got in PJ Tucker. He can just annoy the hell out of Kevin Durant. And Drew Holiday's a massive upgrade. My fear is, though, Giannis hit a bunch of threes going back to last night in their second of a back-to-back wins over the Nets. And I just don't think that's who he is once we get to the playoffs. I know. He's shooting the ball well. Like, I get it. Okay. But 4 of 12, like, I don't want him taking 12 threes once we get around to the playoffs. And Budenholzer, though nobody, you know, though Steve Nash, we have no idea if he can win in the playoffs. Budenholzer hasn't shown the ability to win in the playoffs. But on back-to-back nights, or back-to-back games, one day in between, Giannis has 49 in a win and 36 in a win. It's pretty obvious that he's taking those games as seriously as any games on the schedule. I don't know, however, if that translates to the playoffs. What does the Fox say? It stands to reason that he could be right, could very well be right. But I'm having a hard time with it because I don't know what the Nets are going to look like in the playoffs. I'm having a real hard time with it. Okay, lots of other things kind of going on. Other things going on. I was watching, I saw this. Did you guys see the Angel Hernandez story? Angel Hernandez is one of those umpires that everyone knows. No one knows umpires' names in baseball, but you know usually Country Joe West and Angel Hernandez. Is that about right, Ramos?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, so he said that he was forced to guess if a fly ball was caught Tuesday because the outfield scoreboard on the wall of Kauffman Stadium, and he guessed wrong. So the Indians are playing the Royals, and Sal Perez hits a fly ball to right center between Harold Ramirez and Josh Naylor. Ramirez went to catch the ball, and it bounced off the tip of his glove and landed on the warning track. Whit Merrifield was on third base. He scored in the play, and the Royals had a 2-0 lead. Andrew Benintendi was on second base, ended up caught between second and third because he was confused at the outcome of the fly ball. Was it dropped? Like, did he drop it? Hernandez thought the ball had been caught at the warning track and signaled that Perez's fly ball was an out. The call led Benintendi to be unsure of what happened after Hernandez's wrong call. Benintendi getting tagged out. The umpire crew got together and awarded Benintendi third base. It was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. So here's what Hernandez told The Athletic after the game. Our goal was to get the play right, and that's exactly what we did. We did talk about this. Replay is an extension of what we do there. As you saw, I basically got blinded by the outfield scoreboard. The pixels of the lights were as clear as white can be. I was trying to make it out to see what happened there. The harder I looked, the less I could see. So I was trying to read the players to see what they did with the ball, and I had to come out with a call. Basically, I guessed wrong on the call. So as soon as I turned around, I started walking towards me. We got together as a crew. We fixed the problem. Okay, Gavin, did you see this play in question?
I did not. I'm trying to watch a muted version of it now. But what Ramos, a weird have
you
series.
Seen it? Ramos, have you seen it?
I did not, no. But
it's weird. It's like one of those, because you don't like Angel Hernandez, or you're just, because he's been involved in controversial calls in the past, you're like, oh, what are you talking about? You got blinded. It's like, but literally blinded by the light of the scoreboard, and you can't really see. I buy that excuse.
I buy it too, actually. And I'm not a fan of, he's made more bad calls than I think I've ever seen witnessed in by a Major League Baseball umpire. But that does sound fair. And the play does sound like a tough play to call. And he did call the other umps together, and they did make the correct call. So I don't know what the problem would be.
Well, if the ball, if if it was called correctly, they may have scored. Benintendi may have scored originally.
He would have went from second all the way home. Okay.
Right, well, you're looking for the ball. Maybe, and maybe not. It's just very confusing play. Very confusing play. And it's one of those things where the scoreboards get bigger and bigger and bigger, but there is a downside to it. And one is, it's hard to look out there and see things. It also, if you've ever been in one of these stadiums with these massive scoreboards, you do have a tendency to stop watching the actual game and just watch the scoreboard. Have any of you guys ever been to Cowboy Stadium?
No.
When you're there, you're like, I haven't been in the new Rams Charger Stadium, but now it's hosting concerts. You've been there?
Yes. No, I've been there, and you're exactly right. I mean, the two things that I took note of was, first of all, how gorgeous it was, the artwork and everything, the detail to the cutouts, even of the light fixtures. You know, they were shaped like the strings of the football. But yes, well, the other thing I noted was midway through the first quarter, I'm looking up at the Jumbotron because it's, you know, it's so clear, it's so convenient, it's huge. Obviously, it's a better view. So, and I was in great seats, but yeah, you end up feeling like, gosh, my neck's sore. It's like, oh, because I'm not watching the game on the field. I'm watching the scoreboard, the Jumbotron.
Now that Jumbotron, it's the circular one like they have in Atlanta, only it's double-sided, right? Is that right?
Well, it's double-sided. And then in the end zones, I was actually sitting in a player's suite in the end zone. And in the end zones, you also have, on the side of the Jumbotron, there's like a smaller square version as opposed to the ginormous ones that go from the 20 to 20, you know, if you're sitting on one of the sides of the field. If you're in the end zone, you've kind of, same thing, you crane your neck up because there's a TV right there too, on the side of the Jumbotron.
I got to see this.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Okay. No, I'm understanding. I mean, they've made all kinds of adjustments to basketball arenas as well with these big scoreboards, and they have the little ones down below for the courtside because the people courtside were like, that's actually designed for people in the third deck, not for people right here courtside.
Right.
Now we get a monitor as well.
And isn't the SoFi Stadium, obviously not any new players, I mean, fans in there just yet, but isn't SoFi Stadium, Deb and Doug, it's also as big as... Maybe not as big, but it's also really big, right? Like
I would think so. I mean, I feel like with these NFL owners and actually anybody who builds a new arena or stadium, I feel like they have to one up the guy before. Don't you think?
Yes.
I mean, I haven't been there to see, but yeah, the Cowboys, I think it's from the 20 to the 20, essentially.
It's crazy.
And there was a punt that hit the thing. So
it was?
Yes.
Who was the punter who was trying to hit the one in Dallas and then finally didn't?
Was that Rock? Was it Baronis? Was it Rob Baronis of the Titans?
Yeah, I just remember he was trying, like literally trying to hit it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
I can see how they'd make a game of it.
Well, it is interesting that here, you know, you finally have a stadium in Los Angeles and it has a dome. Now, the dome is a good thing because then you can get potentially a Final Four and all kinds of other stuff in there. But like the wholesale in LA is the weather is always great. And yet you're not going to celebrate that weather in the stadium.
That's true. Yeah, and it's funny because in Dallas, there are times that I wish that they would shut the thing because it still has the wacky, you know, the shadow of the sun or the glare of the sun on the field.
Yeah, no, you actually drive right into the sun, right? It's an east-west stadium that they thought they could get away with, I guess, because it's, you know, because it's a dome. But then there are times in the third quarter, especially those afternoon games, where the sun is shining right into the stadium, right into the quarterback's eye. Sometimes the fourth quarter, and you got to be careful if you're the Cowboys,
mm-hmm.
what way you pick of which way you're going?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard Allegiant is amazing too. That's a less expensive Las Vegas stadium. That's the new Raiders stadium. So they what's interesting about stadiums is stadiums and basketball arenas, and the Indianapolis is the only place maybe that they've tried to accomplish this. Baseball has done a great job of trying to make places feel like throwbacks. Whereas football and basketball, they just try and make, they all kind of look and feel the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right? A lot of the setup is very, very similar. All right, coming up next, Aaron Nagle is going to join us next hour. He of Cheesehead TV fame. Speaking of cheeseheads, we have more on the Aaron Rodgers situation. And apparently Aaron Rodgers has not only been unhappy for a long time, but he actually used the name Jerry Krause to describe his current general manager. How's that going over? We'll discuss next in the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.